Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
In the state of Georgia versus Jose Antonio Ibarra, case SU24CR0323, count one, malice murder. I find the defendant guilty. Count two, felony murder. I find the defendant guilty. Count three, felony murder. I find the defendant guilty. Count four, felony murder. I find the defendant guilty.
I think there was a total. Is that the full clip, Bren? It went on. Because I think there were 19 counts. Yeah. And I think that he was found guilty on 19 counts. As he is, I'm very, very resolved to hear that that's the case. That happened this morning. And Andy McCarthy is going to join us in 15 minutes from right now. So you're going to want to keep it right here and hear what Andy McCarthy has to say about that. As well as, you know, this is kind of really setting the tone for me. Because the Lake and we booked Andy McCarthy before the Lake and Riley stuff ended up coming to fruition this morning. And when I really want to know if this Donald Trump case is going to get dismissed. Everybody says it's supposed to. I really would like to know. But Lake and Riley, this young college aged girl out for a run, murdered in a vicious, vicious way, guilty on all counts. And it just makes the lawfare part of the Donald Trump case seem even more ridiculous. It's offensive how ridiculous it actually is. Andy McCarthy will talk about that with us at about 12:25. We're looking forward to that conversation to get to the bottom of this case and how it unfolded and how we got to this guilty verdict. The things that we discovered about Ibarra during the course of this case, flown around the country, put up in fancy, fancy hotels, provided food, provided meals. He's a member of Tren de Aragua. He's a member of a gang. And he kills this young girl who was taking a jog. It was at University of Georgia, I believe. It's just absolutely repulsive. And when you think about it, and you know how these people who have come to this country illegally, remember when Donald Trump... Ryan, you remember when in 2016, probably, I don't think it was in 2015, Donald Trump was like, there are rapists and murderers coming into our country. And the left was like, how dare you?
Mm-hmm. It was xenophobic.
When you open up the borders the way the Democrats have opened up the borders, you do not profile the people who come in here. In fact, you put them on planes and you put them up in ritzy hotels. That's the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris way. It seems kind of silly to say Kamala Harris now, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
She was in charge of the border. Call it whatever you want. We know what a border czar looks like, and we are chomping at the bit to let Tom Homan do his job. But if you want, if the left, like, sit down for a second, Democrats, sit down and listen to me for just a second, and then call me all the names you want. But if you really, really want our borders to be open so people can come here for a better life so they can pursue the American dream, don't you want them to be vetted when they come in? Because this guy is going to ruin it for the rest of them. Tom Homan, because of young, innocent girls like Lake and Riley, is going to deport like you've never seen illegal immigrants deported in this country, and we are very close to that moment happening. It's November 20th. We are 2 months away from Donald Trump. We are 2 months away from Tom Homan doing what they should have done a long, long time ago. But as the saying goes, Democrats, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Barack Obama, everybody who led us to this point where we got to be talking about Lake and Riley, we should not even know Lake and Riley's name. We shouldn't be aware of who she is. Think about your child right now. Does your child have a name that's known by everybody across the country? Do you want your child's name to be known by everybody across the country? Because that's how it happened for Lake and Riley's family. Lake and Riley had to die for American people to wake up on both sides of the aisle and see that what the Democrats have been trying to shove down our throats is wrong? No, she didn't have to. But she did. And now we are going to react in a way that I think is going to be way more heavy-handed than it ever would have been beforehand. What a sad thing for Lake and Riley's family to have to understand. There's no solace in it. You can't be like, well, look what it's doing for the country. There's no solace. If it were my child, I'd take my child back in a heartbeat over all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a tragedy. Everybody knows that. You have to acknowledge that no matter which side of the political aisle you're on. The thing about illegal immigration that kind of gets lost, because remember in 2021 when Jim Carafano came on the show and he goes, look, it's March. I'm telling you,
yes,
this is going to be a huge problem.
On this
and we
show.
Were all like, oh boy, this sounds like something that we should keep an eye on. And then within a month, everybody was talking about it. And the problem has not gone away. It's still happening now. We're still talking about it. There are so many political issues, economy, for instance. There are things you should do and you shouldn't do, but there's a lot of nuance. You know, there's like, oh, we got to make this decision at the right time. Got to do this with the interest rates. With illegal immigration, there is no confusion about how to handle that issue. You just don't allow illegal immigration. That's it. You allow legal immigration where you can vet people, and you don't allow illegal immigration. It's that easy, and it is a political problem manufactured by Democrats.
Yeah, and they have a purpose. They're not just looking the other way. They're looking squarely at it. They think that this is going to somehow benefit them politically. There's no other explanation for it. They haven't been commenting this entire past 4 years about how great their immigration system is, how wonderful things have been going. They've looked the other way. They've looked the other way because they know it's wrong, but they also know in their minds that they benefit from it. But I'm not so sure that they end up benefiting from this. At this point, this country, yes, to use the Democrat point, is made of immigrants. But not like this. This is not how this country was formed. I saw a X post this morning, and it said something like, the poor in this country, you know, it talks about the and the illegal immigrants who are here in this country. A lot of that money that goes into the federal government goes out to help those people. And then the wealthy in this country get tax breaks and loopholes and benefits and all, you know, they benefit from the tax system that way. But the middle class funds all of it. The middle class is paying for all of this. Does that mean that businesses shouldn't be encouraged to thrive in the United States of America? Well, when you listen to Donald Trump talk about putting tariffs, especially when he talks about mirrored tariffs, what do you tax when we trade into your country? We'll do the same. Like, we do what you do. I think that's a brilliant policy, because one of two things is going to happen. They're going to have to pay more money to ship their goods in, equal to what we pay to ship our goods in, or it's going to cost less for us to ship goods into their countries. When you look at the way President Trump is addressing the economic climate in the United States of America, he's trying to create a pro-job environment, one where the jobs that are created aren't from government. Joe Biden's job creation that he's had in this country has been government jobs. That's not good, because who pays for those government jobs? The people who have those government jobs, the American people, are the ones who pay for that. The Democrats, when they had the keys to the kingdom, used it to grow government as much as they possibly could to benefit government run by Democrats. That's the game. And America showed up in the beginning of November and said, yeah, we've had enough of that. Our country is not safe anymore. We don't feel safe running on trails on our college campuses anymore, because you're getting murdered by illegal immigrants who were flown here by the United States government. And they have no explanation whatsoever as to why we need to be doing these things. This guy, how old is he? I don't know what his age is, but he's like, what do they keep saying? Military-aged men. He's in a gang. He is living a better lifestyle than many, 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 many veterans who are on the streets right now, because they went and fought in a war. They have PTSD. They come home and they can't put their life back together. And we say, you just sit right there, and we're going to fly immigrants into our country and put them up in fancy hotels while they are members of gangs and they're killing our young girls. What in God's name are we doing right now in this country if we are not making that our number one priority? First and foremost, yes, we need to make the economy great again in this country, but we have to make it safe again. J.D. Vance during the campaign said it so well. I don't remember which interview he was doing. It was a 60 Minutes or something like that. And they were like, well, that was only one or two places that Venezuelan gangs were taking over in Colorado. And he's like, listen to yourself. One or two places? How many would raise the alarm for you?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it happened in Nashville right after that. And these issues are they're amazing because Trump, he says things that just cut right to the core and they cut through all the noise.
No bologna sausage.
He said this months ago. And people go, oh, come on. And then you watch this happen. He goes, look, they're emptying out their prisons in Venezuela. They're emptying out their prisons in other nations. They're sending their gang members here because they don't want to deal with them. And they know that we will, and it'll be on our tax dollar then. And now, how much proof do you need that this is happening?
If the Republicans miss the opportunity in their first 100 days to eliminate everything that we can with the power that the Republicans have been entrusted with in this past election, they need to go all in on course correcting the damage that the Democrats have done to this country in the last 4 years. But I'll even add to that. It's not as though the Democrats hadn't had policy success with their ridiculously ignorant woke bullcrap that they've been pushing through ever since Barack Obama was in office. Mr. Fundamentally Transformed the United States of America. How do you feel right now? Do you know the name Lakin Riley? Because this one goes back to that idea of America being what Hillary Clinton called. She dreamed of a borderless country. Oh, so we can all hold hands together and sing kumbaya. No, I think you just want a larger tax base. I think you want larger geographic locations to rule and reign. Ask the people of Haiti how Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton had treated them. The only way to be as generous with the world responsibly as America traditionally is if we put America first. We did not put America first when Jose Ibarra came into this country. The Democrats put the Democrats first and it cost Lakin Riley her life. And 19 counts found guilty later. We will find out what this man's sentence is. We will find out what the United States justice system, what is justice here? Think about that for a second. What is justice? If you're Lakin Riley's mom right now, if I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about my daughter being gone, there is no satisfying verdict or sentence that can be read right now. There's no justice. The American government aided and abetted in the death of Lakin Riley in their absolute absconding behavior regarding what took place leading up to her death. And they did it all for political gain. That's the repulsive part about all of this. They did it for themselves. And Lakin Riley, collateral damage to the Democrats. Collateral damage. There will be a new sheriff in town, not soon enough if you ask me. But remember today, remember this moment. On January 20th, Donald J. Trump is going to be sworn back into office and it's going to start moving fast. It's going to make the left go bonkers crazy. They're going to start talking about, oh, the poor immigrants and the children. And what about our children? What about Lakin Riley? When we start doing what we should have done, when we start correcting the error of our ways that honestly exists before the Democrats came in and lit the whole thing on fire, when it starts getting the rubber on the road, remember today, remember what it would be like to watch Lakin Riley's parents sit there, her college roommates sit there and watch whatever the sentencing is going to be for Jose Ibarra. Do they going to feel justice that day? The answer is no, because there's no justice that can be provided to these people who don't have their daughter any longer. There's no sense of justice that's going to be provided to them. What the American government can do is enforce the laws that are on the books and make sure that we don't learn some other innocent girl's name nationwide because another situation like this took place. And on January 20th, it's going to start going fast. And people are going to freak out. Just understand, they put us in the position to have to do this. And America said, go for it. We need you. Do what you do, Donald Trump. Andy McCarthy is going to talk to us when we come back. Get his reaction to the Lake and Riley situation. 19 guilty verdicts on Jose Ibarra, the illegal immigrant gang member who's here in our country, who killed Lake and Riley, maybe even in a gang initiation thing. I'm not even 100% sure what materialized there. We're also going to ask him about Donald Trump's cases, but we'll get to the Lake and Riley stuff first. We'll be right back.
The question is, what happens to President-elect Trump's sentencing that is scheduled for next week? And here, what we're learning is that the district attorney has made it clear they're going to reject and try to defend against any effort to dismiss this case. But they are open to delaying this sentencing for up to 4 years because they understand that it's going to take time to litigate this issue of the future of this case. So they do not agree to dismiss this case, but while that question is being litigated, they understand that the sentencing has to be paused. So President-elect Trump will not be sentenced next week. And the next step is the two parties will litigate this issue. And again, they understand that the sentencing, if it goes forward, may not happen for another 4 years.
So, oh my gosh, are we going to be waiting for Donald Trump to be sentenced after he gets out of the Oval Office? Are you serious right now? That seems absurd, I would say. We're also watching right now the sentencing in the Lake and Riley murder trial is supposed to be happening soon. So we're going to cover that when it is delivered because, you know, I'm not really one to follow court trials, you know, specifically. Of course, we've followed a lot of the Donald Trump stuff, but it's not something that I usually get too wrapped up in if there's some high-profile court proceeding.
Like outside of politics.
Yes.
Like a Casey Anthony or a Murdaugh.
The other mom, which I just was looking at that before. Killer mom Susan Smith. Do you know this story?
No.
30 years after South Carolina killer mom Susan Smith was put behind bars for drowning her two toddler sons. A board unanimously voted to deny her parole after she appeared on a jailhouse court feed on Wednesday morning. So that happened this morning. I was listening to a little bit of this on the way in just on regular Fox News reports. And she put him in a car and drove him into a lake. Now, it was 30 years ago. She'd like to get parole. Her quote was, "I know that what I did was horrible. I'm sorry that I put them through that. I wish I could take that back. I really do. I was just scared. I didn't know how to tell the people that love them that they would never see them again. I'm sorry. I know that's not enough. Just words, but they come from my heart." And?
Yeah. I mean, these, gosh, that's so terrible. How do you come back from that?
I don't know. You know, those are the types of things. And then I read the stories and the details. I'm like, oh, that's why I don't follow these things.
Yeah.
The Lake and Riley situation is a little bit different because this will, like, the country cares about Lake and Riley. And they care about what happens to the man who did this to her. They understand that we are in a position where we have set the table for this is a ripe situation for something like this to happen to Lake and Riley.
Yeah. You know, Kyle Rittenhouse was the same. These are big, high-profile court cases, but they cross into politics.
So we wait. I think it's 19 guilty verdicts that we heard earlier today, and sentencing is going to be delivered here shortly. When we get to our guest, Andy McCarthy joins us once again, contributing editor at the National Review, host of the McCarthy Report, and a Fox News contributor. Andy, thank you so much for the time today. I guess a day for justice, it seems, in the guilty verdicts of Jose Ibarra, who murdered Lake and Riley. I don't know that it would feel like justice to Lake and Riley's parents, though, having heard so many of the things that should not have happened leading up to the event where he had access to kill their daughter.
It's just a horrific case, Annie. I mean, I don't have a better way of putting it. I'm sure somebody with a better way of words than I have might be able to come up with something. But, your heart just breaks for the family, and there's no good answers for why this guy was in the country. I mean, he should not have been in the country, and they had like a million chances to stop him. And he's one of God knows how many others who've gotten into our country under these policies, which basically eviscerated our border. And it's all well and good to say the people who engineered those policies are now, you know, reaping the whirlwind from it because they've been beaten in an election. But that's not a satisfactory answer to Lakin Riley and her family.
No, it's not. Nothing brings her back, and that's all that they would want. In a piece that you wrote that I encourage people to check out a little bit earlier this week in the National Review, that you wrote about Lakin Riley, you talk about how Ibarra was, in your words, quote, encountered by border agents while illegally crossing into the United States at El Paso in September 2022. What should Americans understand about our systems that are put in place to vet people who are coming here and how they were or were not working?
Well, I think the word encounter is a good place to start. I always quote that because that's their word for it. I refer to it as a euphemism, which is probably the pleasant word for it. The word that I would actually like to describe it as, we probably can't say on a family radio show. But they use the word encounter because they don't follow American law, and they don't want you to notice that. So what they're supposed to do when they encounter an illegal alien entering the country is apprehend that person and detain him until the conclusion of removal proceedings. And Congress was crystal clear about this. Even somebody who actually has a colorable legal claim to stay in the United States, even though they crossed the border illegally, and the number of those people who actually have a legitimate claim on staying here is vanishingly small. I mean, after all, if they had a real legal claim, they would come in legally, right? What Congress said is, even if you have a colorable claim, you're still supposed to be detained until you get to the end of the proceeding and the judge has found, yes, you have a colorable claim to stay. And then we can talk about the conditions of your release. But other than that, the vast majority of these people should be detained and rapidly sent out of the country. And instead, what the Biden administration has done is not only not follow the law, not detain people and hold them till the conclusion of their proceedings, they have aided and abetted people in coming to the country to the point that you can actually schedule your illegal entry into the United States with the Biden administration. They have a special app for it. Where, you know, you basically make an appointment and you go to, you know, one of various hubs in Mexico and you make the arrangement to get in that way, and they'll process you and then let you come through our portal. And because they've let you come through it, we're supposed to buy the fiction that you've entered legally, yeah, when in fact you're just as illegal as if you had crossed the border without using their app in the first place. And this is just an illegal parole program that Congress, which is the only one that has an authority in our system to design a program like this, has never signed off on it. So this is something that Biden just flat made up, and yet they've been doing it for 4 years.
Well, as you said, the American people have spoken and said we need to do this differently, and that will happen, just not soon enough for Lakin Riley and her family, which is the real tragedy here. I'm glad we were able to talk to you about this because we actually booked you initially to talk about the Donald Trump trial. Trump lawyers today have demanded the Bragg case be immediately dismissed and says that the election supersedes political motivations. You know, in light of waiting on the sentencing for the Lakin Riley justice that we are awaiting, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the state of these trials in New York. What do you think about where they are right now and what each side is trying to get done?
Well, I don't think much of Trump's motion legally. It's a, you know, it's a political claim, and it's true that Bragg is politically motivated, but the status of president of the United States is not a defense to a criminal charge, and I think President Trump would be on solid ground if he was asking for a postponement of the sentence, and he's on solid ground if he wants to proceed to appeal. Of course, he'd have to be sentenced and formally found guilty before he could do that, and then he could pursue his appellate rights and try to get the case thrown out. And I think there's probably about 10 grounds for throwing it out, but you can't. I just don't think he's going to get anywhere coming in and saying, you know, the voters have spoken, therefore you must dismiss the case. There's no, an election is not a reason to throw out a guilty verdict as a matter of law. Now, you could argue, and they do argue, that as a matter of prosecutorial discretion, at this point, it would be in the public interest for Bragg to dismiss the case, because we shouldn't want a new president to be under this burden. Bragg obviously knows that there's a lot of problems with the case, and he'll have trouble if he ever has to eventually defend it on appeal. And it does seem kind of ridiculous to freeze the thing in place with the eye toward, you know, in 2029, when President Trump is 83 and a twice elected American president, hopefully coming off a successful term in office. No prosecutor in his right mind would want to pick up that case and run with it at that point. So there's a lot of good reasons for common sense to prevail and for prosecutorial discretion to be exercised in a way that would dismiss the case. But from Brad's point of view, and this is, I had some arguments with people on my own side about this, because they wanted to pick Democrats as kind of a monolith, and they want to say, Democrats have learned the valuable lesson that lawfare blew up on them. It turned out that the voting public didn't like it, and they punished them for it at the ballot box. That may be true of national Democrats. It's not true of Manhattan Democrats. Mm. Kamala Harris defeated Trump in Manhattan by 65 points. There was polling in the New York Post, I think 2 days ago, maybe 3 days ago, that shows that Bragg is a prohibitive favorite to win re-election when he's up for re-election next year. He ran the last time promising that if he got elected, he would basically do what he did, which is get Trump. And he brought cases not only against Trump, but Trump's organization, his chief financial officer. That's very popular with progressive Democrats in Manhattan. And they will probably reward Bragg with reelection. So, you know, it's one thing to say that lawfare was bad for Democrats generally. Lawfare has been really good for Alvin Bragg.
You know, I'm thinking as I'm listening to you explain that, and jurisdictions and, you know, the constituency is so important here, because when you're talking about Manhattan and the people there and how they support what has been taking place, I'm looking over at the District of Columbia presidential votes. Kamala Harris got 92.4% of the votes. Donald Trump got 6.7%. And then I'm thinking to myself, all of these court cases that have been brought against Donald Trump, where are they happening? Why are they happening there? And watching Alvin Bragg and the litigators in New York bring federal cases and shove it into this type of a district. I mean, it seems as though there's a lot of sense behind what they're trying to do. You said earlier, you know, common sense could prevail. Knowing all of the players here, do you anticipate that this part, the Alvin Bragg thing, will continue throughout the course of Donald Trump's presidency, or will common sense eventually find its way to the surface?
No, I think that the Bragg case will continue because he has an advantage that Jack Smith didn't, and that is he got his case to trial, and he won the jury trial, which puts him in a very different spot. You know, Smith has the problem that with the federal prosecutions, they're bound by longstanding Justice Department guidance that says a sitting president can't be indicted or prosecuted. So you couldn't do anything with those criminal cases now. I think the Justice Department sensibly has decided we're going to dismiss these cases rather than hold them in abeyance or suspend them, because they know that starting January 20th, Trump is going to be running the Justice Department. So Trump would dismiss the cases if Biden's people didn't do it now. But that case is in a different posture because it never got to trial. The Atlanta case is in a different posture because it never got to trial. Bragg got to trial and he won, and he doesn't want to give that up. And, you know, from a public interest perspective, you can be very critical of that. You know, I think an American should not want, if it could be avoided, a president under the cloud of an eventual criminal sentencing. And you would hope that the DA would look at this and say, well, you know, a lot of errors in the case. And then the Supreme Court, I mean, he has an out, right? The Supreme Court decided the immunity case a month after the trial.
Yeah.
So he could even not confess error. He could say, look, when the court decided the case, it changed the landscape, so we're going to fold our tent now. He'd still have his jury verdict. No one's ever going to be able to take that away from him, right? He'll always be able to use that politically. But it's not good enough. He wants to keep it. And Trump really doesn't have a legal right until appeal to get it thrown out, unless Judge Merchan throws it out. But if Judge Merchan throws it out, that would be the first time in years that he's ruled against Bragg and in favor of Trump. So I'm not holding my breath waiting for that to happen.
Just a real simple question before we let you go. We're speaking with Andy McCarthy right now. Is Donald Trump a convicted felon right now?
No. This is a great question. And it's been confused a lot because of the Democrats' campaign rhetoric. The way it works in the criminal law, if you want to call him a convicted felon, I suppose politically you can do that. But as a matter of law, in the criminal law, there is no judgment of conviction until the defendant is sentenced. So right now what we have are jury findings of guilty, and Trump has made post-trial motions to get those vacated, the guilty verdicts, and the judge hasn't ruled on that yet. So there hasn't been sentencing, and most importantly, the judgment of conviction has not been entered on the court record. So Trump is not a convicted felon. That would not happen until sentencing. And I think that's part of the reason that Trump may be content with having this thing suspended for 4 years, because as long as he hasn't been sentenced, he doesn't enter the White House as a convicted felon.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'm glad you were able to clear that up for us. We're going to share that little comment far and wide. Andy McCarthy, it's so great to have you on the show with us. We always appreciate you giving us all this legal expertise. It clears a lot of stuff up for us, and we're thankful for
Thanks.
It.
Thanks so much, Annie. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye. Andy McCarthy is a contributing editor at National Review. His article, which you can check out right now, Lake and Riley Murder Trial Underway in Georgia. It's such an easy read. It's like a page and a half printed out. And do you know how many times this guy's been involved in being apprehended or detained by law enforcement? And they just let him go. We brought him here. We moved him around the country. Jose Ibarra was basically our guest. We hosted him. And then he killed a young girl. This all under Joe Biden's watch. Something big has to change. And thank the Lord in heaven, 2 months from today, change is coming. It's coming in hot as well. Quick break. When we come back, Wiggins America is going to help us handle our next performance review. This is why you're here, isn't it? This is why you come to the Annie Fry Show. Your next performance review, is it coming up? A new year is coming. Do you get it at the end of the year? Are you going to get it at the beginning of the year? Ryan Wiggins' advice on how to handle that the best. Next. Don't go away. Hands off of
Wiggins.
Oh, Wiggins.
Well, yesterday I gave you some advice on how to look busy at work if you're not that busy.
And in no sense of irony whatsoever, we now talk about performance reviews.
Today we're going to talk about what to do and say at your next performance review.
If all of those pieces of advice didn't work.
Right. And again, yesterday was to make sure that everybody else is working. I trust that you are, but you want to be the person in the room pointing at other people's flaws.
Me?
No, oh. Everybody.
Oh.
This is what I'm trying to tell everybody to do.
He got in trouble with Mark this morning.
That's true.
Did you?
Yeah. Mark goes, brought me up in that segment, did you?
Was he listening?
He was listening.
Oh, no. He's not supposed to listen. You're supposed to be napping right now, Mark.
That's what I said.
Cox. We've got too many Marks.
Why are you listening to the show? You should be taking a nap, enjoying yourself. But no. He was listening because he wanted to know how to be a better employee.
When he's out, they should call that show Missed the Mark. Go on.
You
I just had
that?
An idea.
Yeah.
Putting that out there. One of you should take it first. We'll see who thinks it's a better idea.
Yeah, we'll see. So these are things that you can do at your next performance review, should you have one, because people think you're not actually working at work.
I wonder how much performance reviews still even occur. I don't want to give anyone here any ideas, but...
I don't know. I could see them being very common still, or nobody does them.
I haven't had many.
We do air checks and stuff, but even those we don't do very often.
An air check, that's industry terminology for our boss listens to us do, like, I don't know, this segment, and then tells us why we should have done better.
It's a performance
which
review.
Is really meta yeah. for what we're supposed to be talking about right now.
If I am listening to this in my boss's office later.
Which you will be then, but not now, because it will be that soon.
I'm telling you right now, Ryan, leave the room. Because
just talk about how great Steve is.
Either the rest of the segment either is not going to be very good, which is why you brought it up, or it's going to be good, but then how do you talk about that? Because it's going to be awkward. Just leave.
How can you do more with this?
You can't.
Or how do you do less of this?
Yeah, I think my performance review is, Ryan, you have maxed out your talent. And I'm not sure how I feel about that.
You're like, so A plus?
Is that good? You're not going any higher than this, buddy. All right. This is the first thing it says, and this is from Career Addict, by the way.
There are more websites on the internet.
I couldn't wait to say that. By the way,
is that even a real place?
It's from Career Addict.
You are a Career Addict. You need an intervention. Somebody help this guy.
Number one, when you sit down with your boss, talk about your achievements. Discussing your achievements.
These are just things you do.
It's a good way to impress your boss and highlight what you've been up to since your last meeting.
I feel like Ryan might be a staff writer over there.
You're supposed to go sit, Career Addict, to sit in your boss's office and be like, so let's talk about the good things I'm doing. You're going to lead with that?
Mm-hmm.
No,
that's what
you're
it says.
Not. No, I'm not.
One thing you don't bring up in a performance review, and this is just bonus, don't bring up your secondary career as a writer for Career Addict.
You're writing this right now. This is voice to text.
It's great. It's good stuff. Number two, talk about a raise.
Is this real?
This is real. If you want to bring up the topic of a salary review, now is the perfect time to ask.
In a performance review.
However, we advise against saying something blunt and tactless like, can I have a raise? I don't know what
it's supposed to be like.
Blunt and tactless.
Just like wink, wink, nudge, nudge?
I don't know that it's telling you exactly how to ask for a raise.
Sit down and say, hey, money man.
But if I were to suggest, I'd say, hey, how about those raises we've all been hearing about?
Nobody's been hearing about them.
Yeah. Or you ever heard about a raise?
No.
Maybe something like that instead of can I have a raise? That's just coming right out with the claws. All right, next one. Now I'm going to skip that one. I don't like that one.
No, let's say it. Now I want to know.
Ask about the development of the business.
How's this place doing?
Yeah,
skip that one.
Maybe ask that one before the raise question.
I questioned your judgment, which is usually the right call. It was not the right call.
But you agreed. Give feedback.
Go back to the raise part.
Give feedback to your manager.
What?
Let your manager know how he or she is doing.
Oh, my gosh.
This is from Career Addict.
This is get a new Career Addict because we just got you fired.
Ask for clarifications. If there's something you don't understand, it's perfectly fine to ask for clarifications. For example, if you're discussing a new project that you're taking on, be sure to ask for clear instructions. Like, why am I being put on this?
This doesn't seem like this is in your best judgment.
You sure about me and this one? You know, I'm pretty busy. Just want a little clarification. Yeah,
walking around making sure everyone's doing real work.
Yeah. Nine, discuss your future. So if you've been in the same position for a while, your career may begin to stagnate, which is bad for both you and your employer. So ask.
Not necessarily bad for your employer. If you're doing what they need to do and they can get away with just paying you that, that's fine.
I got to agree with you there.
That's
your employer's like, you doing the job?
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Stay right where you are.
But you may want to ask for yourself.
Hey.
What kind of opportunities do I have?
Let you know
here?
Nate Foy is doing
Stop doing
reporting.
That. Stop doing that. This is off-air jokes.
Side note.
Goes on air.
Ryan's a big fan of Nate Foy, the reporter.
Look. No. Fine. If we're going to go there now, rest the whole segment's going to be Nate Foy.
Yeah.
All right. Here's what happened. Yesterday, Annie mentioned something about Nate Foy, and I assumed that she was talking about him because he's an attractive guy.
I talk about men without even considering how attractive they may be.
And I'm like, oh, okay, because he's a hot guy or something like that. And you said that's not all what I was saying.
I didn't bring him up. He was on
TV. He was on the TV.
I didn't just walk into the room and be like, Nate Foy.
Hey, Nate Foy. All right.
No.
I didn't either. But now apparently I'm associated with being very attracted to Nate Foy.
You said he was hot.
Yeah, because I figured that's why you were talking about him. He's a hot guy. As I think I said something along those lines.
How many times in this room, how much time have you and I spent together? How many years have you and I been in this room together?
5 or 6.
5 or 6 years. How many times in those 5 or 6 years have I walked in and just openly talked about how hot I thought some random guy was?
I think it's time to sort of break down that barrier.
Well, it hasn't happened yet.
Because I know you're thinking it. And so I'm just trying to get you to open up a little bit and be like, yeah, okay, that's a hot guy.
I know the times that we're living in.
Uh-huh.
I am not a dude. I don't think like that.
Okay.
That's not part of the process.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is all learning for me then. You know, if I see a guy on TV, I'm like, I bet women think he's attractive. I'm going to say that out loud.
You're going to try to look like Nate Foy. He's going to come in tomorrow in a suit.
Nate Foy is somebody we could probably interview, so this is a little awkward.
Yeah, he's offered to us like every day.
Don't take that. That's going to be a weird interview if you do it now.
Brad, the next time Nate Foy is on the two ways, tell me what the subject is and I will do my research.
Oh, my gosh. No, no.
Yeah, I'm so in for that.
No.
I'm going to tell him, too.
Put it as
I'm gonna
hot
tell
guy
him.
In the byline.
I'm going to tell him. Like, I'm just going to say,
slash hot guy.
Fox News Radio reporter, Ryan Wiggins, certified hot guy.
Oh, that's going to be weird.
Yeah, it is. I can't wait.